Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, joined alongside me, Whitney Wright. Whitney, it is a kind of beautiful sunny day in San Diego. I say kind of because it's still, I know folks from all parts of the world that are not in environments like San Diego will hate this, but like, it's been kind of chilly.
It's been a little chilly. I've enjoyed it though. I enjoy the rain and the kind of different weather. So it makes days like these like so much more special, you know?
Yeah, it does. And then we're going to get like hopefully hundreds more. I mean, that's what San Diego sold itself to me. It advertised itself mm-hmm. as a place where it's always late spring in the Midwest. And that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And this year we've gotten lots of rain and everything else. It's a very turbulent time environmentally as well as in the world of publishing and just about, I don't think there's an industry right now not going through something kind of chaotic.
That's really true, actually. When you look at the news, there's so much going on, and a lot of it actually has to do with AI, I feel like. And so we're still talking about AI today.
It's kind of hard not to.
You can't, it's just like, it's something new literally every single day. Like I checked yesterday the news, and then I checked this morning, and there's like even more information out just so.
I keep having friends ask me actually, those that listen to the show, you know that I like have a pretty strong opinion about this being something that's like iPhone internet level type of disruption for our world. And I've had people ask me like, do you really think it's going to be that big of a deal?
Mm-hmm.
And the point that I make to them is like, this is not just a trend that mm-hmm. it's going to just kind of like live in the background of our lives now. It's just, like kind of like novel thing. Because like you think about how much hype something like the cryptocurrency or NFTs or something like that got, where it's like, you know, the dream that was being sold by those technologies was like never in practice. And mm-hmm. some of the applications of it, like we may still see, but like you didn't really see, you saw a lot of talk and a lot of like hope, but not really mm-hmm. a lot of like traction.
Right.
This is something where it's like, every week you learn about something new that's being done or something new that's available with AI.
Yeah. Didn't you like recently tweet like how many new AI tools came out in like a single day or something?
400
like
in the last 10 days, whenever I.
Yeah.
And realistically, it's like that's just somebody that's assembled the ones that they're aware of. It's like,
right.
Who knows how many there actually have been?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So Google is definitely focusing on AI. So there's been restructures in their company that seem to prioritize Bard AI chatbot. So CNBC reports that Google is reorganizing its management within its virtual assistant division to concentrate on Bard. Previous reports indicate Google has been reallocating team members from various departments to concentrate on Bard as a code red effort, basically. I know, I was like, Google's really scrambling.
Yeah.
For example, Google Assistant's engineering VP is now going to lead Bard engineering team. So, just seems like, Google is kind of scrambling a little bit to I guess, get Bard up to the same speed as ChatGPT.
It certainly feels that way. And, I think they have to view it as an existential threat from the standpoint of, search is their business.
Right.
Everything, I mean, search realistically and their sort of like work suite, because there's two things that gives Google access to the rest of all their businesses. The reason mm-hmm. why advertisers want to use their ad platforms is because they have this immense access to people that use the search engine where they can serve ads directly. Same thing to the only reason why they have so many access to websites is because websites were able to like utilize Google AdSense to make money from that. So those two things work together. Mm-hmm. If all of a sudden you don't have people using those tools, websites or search engines, all of a sudden your business is like really loses a lot of steam.
Yeah.
And then you add into that, you know, like they have access to a lot of user emails and user data because of things like Gmail and Calendar.
Mm-hmm.
But people use those things because it's Google and it's been integrated for a while. That part of their business is probably not going away, but that part of their business is also not, I mean, like you separate the value of search engines, like the value of Gmail and stuff is still just user data.
Mm-hmm.
So like, how much like advertisers will bleed into other places really quickly if mm-hmm. you took away like the search engine itself. Even display is like a drop in the bucket compared to what they make in search ads.
Yeah, exactly. We've talked about that before on the podcast multiple times, but I guess what do you think about them like restructuring the company to prioritize Bard, like, since they are, you know, search, more search oriented, like, do you think it's kind of like, I don't know, like, do you think that they need to be focusing so hard on AI? Like, well, do you think that, like, it is a code red?
It depends. It's like, I have to be a little bit ignorant of sort of like what I know. Mm-hmm. So I'm too familiar with their organization and some of the people and the way that things work there to probably give an opinion that's not sort of like very targeted towards certain strategies. But I think the biggest thing with something like Bard is that it's not as good as OpenAI. And by releasing it when they did, they felt behind it. It feels rushed. Like, everything very much feels sort of like, some, like, the top is basically saying, like, why isn't this stuff, like, already out and done? And what's happening is they're executing on these things sort of like out of fear, because people are just trying to get out what they've got. But it's not actually probably like the best version and the most thoughtful version of what they can do. So I think that their best strategy is to really regroup and then put on basically, like, how does, like, everybody uses Gmail, calendar, like, all these different, like, tools that they have available. How do you integrate something like Bard to where it feels like seamless inside of all this stuff? Because that's really where they're going to be able to win, is like, I'm going to use OpenAI's ChatGPT for, you know, stuff for ChatGPT instead of Bard, unless it's like Bard is like there in front of me. Like, when I'm writing an email or, you know, working on a spreadsheet or whatever, that's really what they should be focusing on, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was just thinking about, you know, how easy it is to use Google to make accounts for things. Like, they made it seamless. And I think that if they are able to do that with AI, then they, like you said, it's like the direction
it's really been the value of their success. I mean, it's a great point, I think, because the search engine, you know, do you remember any of the other search engines prior to Google?
Yahoo. I mean,
AltaVista.
Yeah, AltaVista. Microsoft, or not Microsoft, Mozilla.
Yeah.
My mom still uses Mozilla.
MSN, I think.
MSN.
I see publisher data a lot, and it's staggering to me how many people, like, are referred from MSN. And it's people that have, like, old computers or old devices where that's like the default.
I used to use MSN. Point. Yeah.
It's incredible. If you're a publisher, you should check out your analytics and just see. You might be surprised. But the other side of that is that I think Google, because they're so simple, their search engine was, like, just really straightforward, just a search bar. And then their email became, like, one of the easiest to use. Like, Outlook at the time, you still had to, like, hit send and receive to send and get emails. And I really like the idea of, like, I mean, there's a Sheets extension for ChatGPT or OpenAI, and Docs extensions that are really, really helpful. I've been using them for a lot of really cool content creation projects, because I don't like to make pivot tables. You want me to do that?
Yeah.
And it can do it for me, but, like, Google should have this in those tools. Like,
yeah.
Why is it not there?
I don't know. Maybe that's what they're working on now. Yeah. I feel like it would have been more advantageous to wait till it was, like, more put together and then release it and kind of blow everybody out of the water. But I think that, I don't know, that's my opinion.
I'm sure almost all of our publishers listening to this podcast use multiple different, like, Google, like, products or tools. And if any of those products or tools, like, have a synergy or, you know, could use some type of, like, Bard OpenAI style AI in it, like, Google will do themselves a huge favor if they can just, like, be incumbent there, because they just have to be as good and more convenient.
Yeah, I agree. So, speaking of Google, this kind of goes back to the lawsuit from the DOJ, but the UK publishers are suing Google for $4.2 billion in lost ad revenue. It's
nothing.
Dropping, I know. Yeah, exactly.
$4.2 billion is actually...
The lawsuit alleges that Google has given preferential treatment to its own ad products since 2014, which results in reduced display ad revenue for publishers. It's in reaction to the DOJ and EU scrutiny, and Google has offered to restructure its ad tech business and show ad rivals on YouTube in response to those two things. But Google has called the lawsuit speculative and opportunistic. What do you think?
So let me ask our publishers and our listeners, do you believe that Google would ever give preferential treatment to their own properties or products in search results? I doubt there's anybody listening that would say they don't.
Right. Yeah. Right?
Now, the question is, and where they're right about the lawsuit, it is speculative and opportunistic.
Yeah.
It's like whenever they catch like the mob bosses, they always get them on like tax evasion. They never get them on like dealing drugs or human trafficking or something. And that's sort of like, I mean, this is trying to get Google on the hook for like, you know, a more serious crime. Mm-hmm. Whenever, you know, realistically, like, I know from experience, they cover the tracks really well here.
Yeah.
They've been able to protect a lot of sort of like what's underneath the hood mm-hmm. of how they make these decisions and stuff like that, while still being able to present like, look, you know, YouTube videos just show up in both our video index and our search results above other ones because mm-hmm. we just add all this extra like meta schema markup. And those things are actually really important to the users, and it gives us data that makes it able to rank better. So it's not that these other videos aren't better or giving preferential treatment. It's just these YouTube videos have a lot more like schema data and context. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, great. How do we put, can anybody put that schema data and stuff like that on there? And they're like, yeah, but it's really, really hard.
Smiley yeah. face, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And I think that that's sort of, and also it has to be like, we have to be able to crawl it this way or that way. Mm-hmm. So they sort of cater the way that they've designed, the way that they, you know, basically serve search results to users mm-hmm. based on ways that they also build their products. So this is where you can contend that they do have something that's like antitrust, where it's like they're literally building a business that's kind of, I won't say monopoly, but it's very dominant.
Yeah.
And then they're using that dominance to give an advantage to all their own products competing in a similar mm-hmm. space.
Yeah.
That is by definition antitrust.
Yeah. So I know that the DOJ lawsuit is, I think, I don't know how far it's getting, but as far as like other countries and stuff suing Google, do you think that this is going to be a trend amongst like especially the EU? Do you think the EU might follow suit?
Yeah, probably. I mean, like the reason why I say that is because if for those that have paid attention to this stuff over time, the EU is usually the first ones to sue Google and mm-hmm. Facebook, and they're always, the regulators are always trying to kind of like get them. I actually see that appetite winding down a bit. So usually whenever global economies are really strong, mm-hmm. There's a big like strong push to sort of like from regulators to sort of rein in sort of like the dominant like people that are taking advantage, especially in capitalistic systems. The economy seems to be headed towards a recession. I saw that they fast tracked a lot of Google's lawsuit here in the US. Mm-hmm. That tells me that they want to get it done with so that Google can make decisions about their business, because it does nobody any good for any government to have, you know, like one of your largest employers and largest companies like mm-hmm. basically disintegrate. So I think what you're going to find is that a lot of these lawsuits will be coming to an end pretty quickly in terms of like they'll get rushed through the system. Mm-hmm. But GDPR was an attempt to try to like play gotcha with somebody like Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, lawsuits like this, I think the best one that's out there is the one that the US state, I think it's like five different state attorney generals brought the antitrust charges against Google. Mm-hmm. I think that's your best bet for like actually getting something to change there, because even at the end of the day, $4.2 billion like is more than just like, you know, spare change for Google. Like they'll spend that.
Yeah.
They'll spend that and they'll keep their business intact. It's whenever you force them to have to break up. If they have to break up in the US, like that'll affect everything globally.
Yeah. How does, I guess if that starts to happen, what would be the fallout, or what would, I guess, like, what do you see happening with that?
So I'm not the first to think this, but you can find there's other people in our industry that seem to like have a decent understanding the way that I do about how, like, where the strengths and how, and, like, the complexity of everything makes it really hard for people to see the actual alleged monopoly. Mm-hmm. And that is that their search business is feeding this ad business, and then they have all these other properties that then make money from that same ad business. Mm-hmm. So that's like, you know, I've got a store and I also own the road that goes by the store, and I only make the road go to my store and not the other ones. Mm-hmm. And then inside of that store, I sell all my own products and I don't sell anybody else's products. Well, I do, but they're behind the counter.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So in this instance, what you have to do is you have to fix one of those two things. And the road seems to be the one that is the easiest to sort of like fix. And that is that Google requires everybody to use their ad server. I think I went over this in a previous podcast and kind of explained a little bit more about how it works. But I think that they would break apart DFP, DoubleClick for, or used to be called DoubleClick for advertisers and publishers. Now it's just called Ad Manager. But I think they would break that out separate from Google's Ad Exchange, which is supposed to allow all net ad networks, including Google's inventory, to all bid competitively. And then the problem with that is that you have this like open source, if you will, sort of exchange where everybody can bid fairly. The problem is that it all has to happen inside of like Google's ad server. So Google, no matter what, is going to force everybody to use Google stuff to do something that should be kind of open source. So it used to kind of be this way. I think you'll see they would break apart probably like the ad server itself. And they'd probably say like, look, you can either let this exchange be an exchange and be hands off. And people can use that your ad server if they want or their own. But you're not allowed to basically like use, like own the relationship with how people buy and sell ads. And then also like serve all the properties and products and stuff like that, that, you know, like they're being served on.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how that goes. I know that these, like you said, these lawsuits are kind of being fast tracked before anything crazy happens with the economy. And so we'll see where that goes. Another big tech topic, Amazon's advertising surge brings opportunities for publishers. This is from What's New in Publishing. So in 2002, Google and Meta's share of digital advertising revenue fell below 50% for the first time in years. And the decline is largely due to the rise of Amazon, who captured over 11% of all digital ad purchases that year. In 2021, they generated $31.2 billion in revenue. And in Q4 of 2022, their ad revenue grew 19% year over year. So what do you think about Amazon kind of rising up to, you know, I guess like against Google and Meta? Do you think they're going to take a bigger majority?
Well, they're definitely heading in that direction. And yeah. I think the answer is it's in like barring some kind of like unforeseen circumstance, the answer is yes, because I remember whenever Amazon broke $1 billion on their ad revenue business, I think it was 2018. And like then everybody's like, hey, look, you know, good for them, you know?
Yeah.
Like they kind of came out of nowhere. And now we're talking about $31 billion. I mean, that they could pay like almost, you know, seven Google EU fines.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, I think that for a long time, it was kind of viewed as you had this like Facebook, Google sort of like advertising dominance where all your money gets lumped into there. But I think now, and it depends on sort of like what type of business you are, but like if you're an advertiser and you sell products that people buy on Amazon, or you sell a competing service or something where somebody might buy something on Amazon that is competitive with what you do, like your money goes to Amazon in the same way that if you're a local business, you probably spend money on Google My Business just as a default. So I mean, especially if you're selling something on Amazon or your products on there, you're probably going to run ads and use Amazon's SSP. And now Amazon continues to build this inventory. It's like a flywheel effect where it's like you've got advertisers. Once you've got that, you can go to publishers. And I think more and more publishers, I know a gross majority of Zoic sites are serving Amazon SSP and it performs well. Like it's not, you know, you could take any ad network or platform that's out there and chuck it into an ad stack. And what you're going to find is that, you know, largely uncompetitive for the most part, like wins every now and then. And then, so whenever somebody is consistently taking up a slice of that pie across a lot of different publishers, you kind of take notice. I think the bigger question sort of kind of comes back to, you know, like one of the things I saw this week was Quora, you know, Quora.
Yeah.
Like, they started doing something where it's like, you know, people ask questions and then it's community-based, like crowdsourcing answers. Well, they have AI bots offering answers now as soon as you hit the page. It literally has like a ChatGPT that like answers the question for you first before you see any user answers. Now, these answers weren't indexed in search, but I found out about it by clicking on a result in search results. Went to Quora and then AI wrote out the answer to me in front of me. I had a feeling that wasn't getting indexed because it's probably for a few reasons, but like the answer is getting served to me as soon as I open the page. it's only a matter of time before you can index those. And the answers are good. You can throw out the window the fact that, like, oh, what about AI? Or is it like, isn't I going to what rank? Or you, this is the wrong question, because the AI is always going to be one step ahead of anything that can detect it anyways. But at the end of the day, the thing that I think about is basically like, if that's a solution that people want, meaning like AI writes you an answer or whatever, I don't think that Quora is going to be the one that we need to worry about.
Yeah.
I definitely think that Google will think, I mean, the moment that Google thinks they can get away with it, they'll do that.
Yeah.
But if that's what people want, then that's an opportunity for a lot of platforms to do it. I mean, publishers can be doing this on their own sites. I don't think it's the final solution, but, you know, like with Amazon and their access to products and stuff like that, like you think about a review, right? Like, I want to know the best product. Do you want somebody with a website full of affiliate links? Is that going to tell you what is the best product? Probably not. So you want something to evaluate something objectively. So this is a tip for if you have review sites out there. I would take all the information on product specs, because I think Amazon should be doing this now, and I don't know that they are. I would take all the information on product specs that I can find, technical, like what updates, whatever. And I would take that document and I would use that as training data with something like ChatGPT or OpenAI. There's systems now where it just allows you to basically just upload files into something and it'll do it for you. And then you can prompt ChatGPT or OpenAI to basically say, like, look, I want you to operate as an unbiased analyst, and I want you to look at the information in document one and the information in document two. I want you to compare and contrast these things, and I want you to give me an answer objectively about what's better or worse about both of them. And then if you can find any information on user experiences or what people generally like about these things, or you can add that into the prompt if you know about a certain product, you know, like people really appreciate durability more than anything else. That is your unique. So that prompt that you're writing, that's what makes the answer and the information, the content that you're going to get out of it unique. So that's something that you could do if you had a review website. It's going to go away eventually because these things are going to be able to replace it. That fundamentally is going to be the what people want. And if Google won't serve it, if Amazon won't serve it, people will find it if that's what they want, and then you'll be the one. And that's something that I would think a lot about with basically like which platforms are growing in ad revenue right now, because I think the future of where ad revenue goes is very undetermined. We can't use the sort of model that we've had forever to figure that out.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, like this article from Wasoom Publishing, they say that Amazon might have a bit of a leg up because of the huge amount of first party data that they have. They've just been collecting it and sitting on it for years.
That? I keep seeing that. I see that mentioned a lot in the sort of like interpolitical like conversations with China and Russia and the United States. But is it, how do you say it, how do you pronounce it,
what part,
hegemon?
Where are you looking?
I thought that's what you just said, hegemon.
No, I said Amazon has a huge amount.
I keep seeing people reference sort of like Google and Amazon and Facebook is this like access or hegemon. I don't know
what that is,
but yeah, anyways,
huge amount. Sorry, maybe I should enunciate a little bit better.
Yeah, well, we can cut that out or we can leave it in. Everybody gets to know. I'm a big fan of transparency sometimes. Yeah, I don't know. My brain gets ahead of me.
Amazon has a huge amount of first party data. So this is, you know, beneficial for their SSP. And they have a growing programmatic advertising presents them growing in that like sphere, presents opportunities for publishers because it fuels competition. And then there's a big pool of quality advertisers that you can't find in other places.
And I mean, I think that that's sort of, I mean, that's the ad industry in general, is everybody wants to figure out how do you carve out a space where you have a particular audience or you have a size of an audience that everybody like wants. Publishers on their own never get quite to that size. And then you get the brand ones that try to like buy up and kind of stitch together. But the problem there is like the scale that you need to reach to be significant enough to garner attention from like large agencies. They always end up grabbing like lots of like really crummy sites, or they like they say like New York Times or our partner sites. And then like one of those partner sites is just like, they're just reselling Google ad inventory on somebody that they got to sign a contract with. And it's like a crossword website. Mm-hmm. And usually it's a bad deal for whoever those people are. They end up being like affiliates for their own company. And so I think what you're going to find is that like, if you're a publisher, the thing that you want to cheer for and root for is competition. Mm-hmm. As convenient as it might be for Google just to be like the dominant player in this space, they take a huge chunk of publisher ad revenue, the largest percentage of anybody, as far as I'm concerned. And the only reason they can is because they provide the most value. So what right. you want is a more competitive environment. It shrinks everybody's margins, especially in times wherever, you know, like right now things are getting disrupted. Hopefully, you know, like especially in a recession, like it makes it really hard for somebody to like dominate necessarily. Mm-hmm. And it means that whenever the ad dollars come back, there's a lot of experimentation that takes place, and that gives everybody an opportunity.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, besides that little blip, is there anything?
I'm pro leaving it in. I'm still like, I have questions. No.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to chat about for as far as, I guess, not really anything, but specifically
stocks? No, I don't think so. I mean, I brought up the point about Quora, and yeah. I think that that's something that if you haven't seen it, I think I put it up on my Twitter, but I would take a look at it just because I think it'll ground you in the reality of how much things are going to change inside mm-hmm. of the world of publishing. So if you're thinking about publishing the way that it's worked for like the last 5 to 10 years, it's not to say that it fundamentally is going to be a different business, but what my point is that you're not going to just be able to do the same things. The people that are out there that are telling you, this is how I did this, or this is how I did that. Mm-hmm. Those people will be some of the first ones that sort of like fall behind if you're not constantly adapting. The publishers I see find the most success are the ones that consistently are putting out content, innovating and trying new things. Experimentation is so important mm-hmm. because you have to be able to find like every site, every category is different. So like your audiences are different. You never like the thing that like my audience finds enduring about me is maybe something they find really annoying about you for yep. whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, with a website, you can have two sites on the exact same topic, but like the approach like could be everything mm-hmm. or the type, you know, I don't know. That's what makes our space like really fun, in my opinion, and creative.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you can find us on YouTube. You know, you can watch this if you would like to. You subscribe, like, leave a comment, and we will get to it as soon as we can. You can also go to thepublisherlab.org and leave a little comment or suggestion at the top there. You can also find all of our episodes on there.
Yeah, leave those comments and questions. It's always yeah. great. Like, I love being able to dig into it and kind of. Yeah, it helps us stay on the topics that you guys like to hear about too. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you have something that you would like us to discuss, throw it in there. And you know, you can find us on wherever you find your podcasts. And this has been another episode of The Publisher Lab.